time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Your host, Charlie Potter, here on WGN Radio. And thank you for being with me this morning. I'm going to start off with an issue that's, well, with a bunch of issues that have been in the news. And some of them quite controversial, and it just depends on your point of view, whether you think they're good or not, but certainly they reflect the fact that things are changing in the administration in Washington, and this will mean changes across the country. The first thing is the waters of the United States. This has been a very, a contentious issue for quite a while, going really back to the Nixon administration with the start of the Clean Water Act, and that is what constitutes waters that belong to a landowner and what constitutes waters that belong to the United States as a whole. And the waters of the United States, the President of the United States recently issued an executive order asking agencies to review what the waters of the United States are. The Supreme Court has weighed in on this, but right now, for the first time in really almost 40 years, we as a country are running unprotected with the waters of the United States. This means that there is not clear ruling as to whether or not that wetland on your property or that stream running through your land or that puddle that may have accumulated in a farm field belongs to you or belongs to the people of the United States. And I'm not this morning going to advocate one way or the other, but what I am going to advocate for is that we need clarity. It is impossible for agriculture to operate without knowing whether or not you might end up being fined or even worse, going to jail if you drain a wetland. Nor is it possible for industry to operate not knowing how they can alter a stream. And I have great deal of firsthand experience on my own farms that I've had with dealing with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and dealing with the Department of Agriculture and dealing with the EPA and other entities trying to figure out what I can do and what I can't do. And for those of you listening who've been in that situation, I'm sure you're sitting this morning nodding your heads, if you're not nodding off at this early hour, saying that you're right. It's an absolute morass of conflicting laws, regulation, governmental overreach. And for those of you who have not had the experience of trying to deal with the EPA and the Corps of Engineers and the Department of Agriculture, all of which are agencies which serve a purpose, but also which are agencies which have become incredibly cumbersome and overly bureaucratic in many respects, I can tell you that much of America that has to deal with the waters of the United States is left in limbo right now. So whether we say that all the waters from the little puddle in your farm field to the headwaters of a stream are waters of the United States, or whether we say, no, they're not, and they belong to you, is a very important issue. But what's really important is that we have clarity on what the laws are and how you as a landowner or you as an industry or you as a commercial use can utilize these waters. From the point of view of wildlife, there's no question that the prairie potholes are the absolute holy grail of the future of most of our wetland-dependent birds and certainly the future of waterfowl. And every time we drain a pothole in South Dakota or northern Iowa, of course, we've drained most of them in Iowa, and we've drained 95% of them in Minnesota, and we drain 99% of the wetlands in Illinois, we have very little left. But in places like the Dakotas, where there's over 50% left, and in eastern Montana, where there's even more left, that's what's left of what was an incredibly rich system of wetlands and small prairie potholes and areas that serve to actually purify not only our water, but also to absorb the runoff. And therefore, we never in historical times had the kind of flooding that we have today because we've drained so many wetlands. But if you're interested in wildlife, obviously the protection of the prairie potholes is an extremely important thing to occur. However, it shouldn't just occur because of an edict from Washington saying you can't drain those because we want a duck to live or we want clean water in Des Moines. It has to occur because there's a reason financially for the landowner to do so. A person doesn't idle their plant if they're making widgets just because it's good for the environment to idle the plant. The same for a farmer. They're not going to not farm all of their land unless there is some way that they can have a monetary reward or some mechanisms to which there is something to put food back on the table. And that has been the entire problem with this discussion of wetlands in America, is that we've come at it from a regulatory approach as opposed to coming at it from an approach which says, how does this work economically for the landowner? How does society receive benefits from what is taking place, whether it is a farmer not draining a wetland, whether it is a water plant not working in the headwaters of a stream, whether it's frankly working along the Mississippi River or any of these America's waters. If there is no financial incentive or benefit to the landowner other than knowing that, geez, by not draining that wetland, I might save a duck or a pheasant, or I might reduce the amount of flood water coming through Des Moines or coming down the Mississippi River or coming down the Ohio Valley. That's an intangible element when you are trying to operate a property for maximum efficiency. So in this whole discussion of the clean waters of the United States, we really need a discussion beyond regulation. We need a discussion about economics and how to have a long-term solution. And as we all know, pendulums in life, they swing back and forth. And they swung way too far in recent years towards a regulatory approach of regulations will solve all of our problems. Penalties will stop people from doing things. We'll make criminals out of individuals who drain wetlands. And now the pendulum has swinging far back the other way to say, which is natural, to say all this has to go away. We've got a terrible mess. And somewhere in the middle is the right solution. And so as we discuss the Clean Water Act and as we discuss the waters of the United States and property rights, it's not easy. And we went to an executive order edict that went way too far in one direction. We need to find a way in the discussion of the Farm Bill, in the discussion of the Clean Water Act, in the discussion of how we treat America's waters, how do we treat the people who own the land on which these waters reside? They provide a societal benefit to the country. They provide clean drinking water. They reduce flooding. They have great wildlife benefits. They serve as sequestrations for carbon. They also have a major role in the reduction of nitrogen, these huge nitrogen loads coming down our rivers. So it's a very deep discussion that can't just be solved with high-level political talk. But really what needs to happen is people need to come together who live in this world and say, what's a reasonable solution? And by the way, there is no reasonable solution without an economic solution to landowners. It will not work. Regulatory approach has been proven time and time again. The heavy hand of government is not going to solve a problem. There are going to be people who always try to get around that, and they do get around it, not because they're evil in any way, but because it's about economics and they need money to feed their family or make their businesses work. So we need a discussion on sound science. We need a discussion on regulation, and we need a discussion on economics. And if those three things can come together, we might actually solve this decades-long problem of what are the waters of the United States, and how should they be utilized for the benefit of society, while also protecting the private landowners' rights, the private property rights, which are the fundamental tenement of the existence of America, our Constitution, and how we arrived at where we are. So we can't run roughshod. On the other hand, we can't just turn all the horses loose. We've got to find some solution, and hopefully that's what happens in the coming months. But this is not something that can just be let to just sit out there in limbo. There's far too much at stake from the point of view of conservation, from the point of view of economics, and frankly, from the point of view of property rights in America. So it's not easy. If it was easy, it would have been solved a long time ago. But what's needed now is a serious dialogue to try to come to the best solution. And before I go to a break, I just want to talk about, when it comes to water for a moment, I want to talk about California And the supposed ending of the drought in California, the drought in California may be meteorologically over, that's a tough word to say at this hour, may be over, but it is not over from the point of view of water on the land and the underground aquifers. And in the coming months, we'll see lots of pictures of the snow melts and lots more flooding in California. And everyone say, oh, the drought's over in California. We can move on. California produces more agricultural products than any part of the United States, than any part of the world. And much of that comes from the pumping of groundwater, because there is not enough surface water running through California to take care of all the agricultural and human needs in California. The groundwater is badly depleted, and 1 year of massive rains is not going to change the situation that we have in California, a huge depletion of groundwater that's been going on over many years because there's too much water being taken out of the ground in California. Too many people, there are too many competing uses, and it is one of those things that is not going to work long term. 38% of the total production in California comes from groundwater in an average year. This is agriculture production. 60% of agriculture production comes from groundwater in a dry year. We've had dry decades in California. So the over appropriation of water, the too many wells, is something that is a long-term issue for California that is not going to go away anytime soon, just because we've had a huge amount of rainfall and this snowfall, rather, and this also will affect what's going on with Chinook salmon and other endangered species. It's a real mess. And the reason we care about it in the Midwest is because so much of our agricultural products come from California, and also a great portion of the Pacific flyways, migratory birds, winter in California, as does the issue of what's happening with our wild salmon populations up and down the West Coast. So there'll be much more on that in the coming weeks, coming years. But when you look at California right now and you say, oh, the drought's over because a weatherman tells you so or a weather lady tells you so, the answer is no, it's not. We're not looking at what's going on below the ground. I'll be back in just a moment with some final thoughts on the great outdoors. This is Charlie Potter, your host of the Great Outdoor Show on WGN Radio, the outdoor voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN, and first a message from your Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoor Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. I hope you're enjoying the show. There was one statistic that I wanted to mention before the break, and then actually it's relevant to the whole discussion of California. California agricultural uses take more than 26 million acre feet of water a year, while all the other uses combined take about 9 million acres. So that's acre feet of water. So an acre foot of water is 1 foot deep over 1 acre, which is 43,560 square feet. So if you have 10 acres at 10 acre feet, that's 10 acres of water, 1 foot deep over a flat surface of 10 acres. So to put that in context, agriculture in California takes almost 3.5 times more water than does all of the people, the 40 plus million people living in California. And that's where the crux of the conflict is. Without California's agricultural production, or if it was dramatically curtailed, we would have a big change in what's available throughout the world in agricultural products. And obviously, we cannot continue to go at depleting our groundwater the way we are in California, no matter how much it snows during the winter. So switching from the West Coast and the whole discussion of water, I want to talk for a moment about two things that are, I think, very important. First is very good news, and that is the governor of Illinois, Bruce Rauner, announced when he was elected governor that one of his primary objectives was to professionalize the Department of Natural Resources. And in doing so, that meant some people had to leave and hopefully professionals could be found in their replacement. There will be an announcement coming this week, I believe, that the Illinois Conservation Foundation has found just such a professional to run an organization that had been politicized and had gone from being one of the single best public-private partnership organizations for conservation in America to just a disgrace, and frankly, just basically out of business. The Illinois Conservation Foundation is a not-for-profit organization that works with the Department of Natural Resources to enable the Department of Natural Resources to carry out projects and also to be able to acquire land and to do so in a way that is exempt from taxes, but also, most importantly, it is exempt from the hands of the legislature. The Illinois Conservation Foundation was set up so that its employees don't work for the state of Illinois and its budget doesn't come from the state of Illinois, yet the way it works is in cooperation with the state of Illinois. And it was set up by Governor Edgar, and at one point had raised over $16 million for the betterment of natural resources in Illinois. In the last few years, it's completely stopped functioning with executive directors who are unqualified and an environment that was simply not working. This week, after months-long search, and true to the governor's words, the state of Illinois and the Illinois Conservation Foundation are going to have an announcement about a professional having been hired into this position, which is an incredible shot in the arm for the natural resources of the state of Illinois. The Illinois Conservation Foundation at least will have an individual running it who's competent, who understands the natural resources, has a professional background, and it is a big step in also being able to enable the Department of Natural Resources to function properly, because the Illinois Conservation Foundation can be the source of private money to do many things the Department of Natural Resources cannot do due to what's going on in the legislative environment that's going on for a long time in Illinois, and that is the utilization of our natural resources. So, fortunately, it's about to happen. I'm not going to spill the beans as to who it is, but there will be an announcement this week, and those of us who care about Illinois' natural resources can at least feel there is some sunshine coming our way. Before I end the show this morning, I just want to quickly go to the discussion of budgets in Washington, and I'll cover this much more in depth next week. But there's a hue and cry and wringing of hands, and the sky is falling over the announcement that the Department of Interior will receive a 12% budget cut. 12% is not the end of the world. And in Illinois, we've seen over a 50% budget cut to the Department of Natural Resources. That's a totally different story. And anyone who's listening this morning who doesn't think a federal agency can find 12% efficiency hasn't spent a lot of time looking at how the federal government operates. Sure, 12% is going to mean a belt tightening. 12% is going to mean some changes, but 12% is not closing down the Department of Interior. It's going to make it be a better run agency. Hopefully it gets rid of some of the fat that's existed for a long time. But when you hear the sky is falling and the Department of Interior is going to go out of business because it's had a 12% budget cut or proposed 12% budget cut, I don't think so. I think that at the end of the day, there's certainly waste in the Department of Interior, as there is in every federal agency. And just as it was many years ago, it's time to tighten our belts and to look at better ways, more efficient ways to do things for the American public and natural resources. I'll be back next week with much more on that and a whole lot more on the great outdoors. Thank you for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.